welcome to the Ted Brewer Show with my son Austin Brewer as co-host. We bring you news every single day, and we try to keep you getting news 6 days a week. We've got a special guest today, Dr. Chuck Baldwin, Pastor Chuck Baldwin from Montana, who's going to be on the air with us for the first half hour of the show. And then we're going to be covering breaking news on the second half of the hour. But as always, we start with the scripture, and so I want to have a Bible reading with you guys very quickly. Proverbs 29:25. Fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. That's the Bible verse. And so, Pastor Baldwin, I want to bring you on immediately. Health Masters is supporting this entire show, so we don't have any commercial breaks through it, so we're going to give you the first 30 minutes. We want to talk about whatever you want to talk about, but I just wanted to tell you also that I was a big Ron Paul supporter, and I was actually his precinct captain back in 2008, and did my best to try to get as many votes for him as we could here in Central Florida. And I, like you, am a patriot, and so thank you for being on the show.
Ted, thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
Let me ask you one question, since Rand Paul is no longer running. You wrote a really good article on this. What do you think he did, other than the fact that he endorsed Mitt Romney in the last election cycle and basically hung his dad out? Other than that, what do you think he did that really made people not want to support him like they did his father?
Well, I think it was a number of things. I think he went into the race with a calculated decision to try and paint himself as being able to work with the establishment. Your analysis of his endorsement of McConnell and all of that is, and Mitt Romney both, I think, is indicative of that decision. I think he was banking on the fact that, you know, his dad had the libertarians and the constitutionalists solidly in his corner, and that Rand, being Ron's son, everybody knew that he was a libertarian, everybody knew that he was, you know, pro-freedom, that he was for the Constitution, that he was not for all these foreign wars, all the things that Ron campaigned on so wonderfully well in both 2008 and 2012. And at the same time, I can't help but think that maybe Rand thought, well, Dad was never able to attract establishment support. Without establishment support, you're not going to win the primary, and I want to win the primary, so I'm counting on both sides supporting me. And it was just a flawed decision, I think, from the very beginning. The fact that he thought he could please both, your rank and file hardcore libertarian conservative constitutionalist that supported his dad so enthusiastically, and then turn around and get the support of the McConnells and the Romneys and the Ryans and all that of the establishment GOP, and you know, it just didn't work. It never took off. In fact, one of the things that I think, you know, kind of disappointing to me was if Rand would have, and I know the Pauls, and I've been friends with Ron for a number of years, so this is, you know, but this is both personal and political for me. I mean, if Rand would have, you know, just made the decision to just come out strong for the, you know, the principles that his dad articulated in the previous campaigns, showed that, you know, bulldogged determination to take it in your face, you know, against the establishment, which Ron did had a very, you know, kind-hearted, soft persona. You know, he was not a Trump-like personality, but his positions were an in-your-face to across the board establishment. But he didn't do that. You know, if he would have, I think Rand would have stolen some of the thunder from Trump. I think Trump took advantage of a vacuum. If Rand had filled that vacuum first, I don't know that Trump would have been able to generate the momentum that he did early on. But with Rand not being willing to do that, a guy like Trump, who has no problem getting in your face and you know, being a bulldog in the way he presents his message, it just gave him a golden opportunity to fill a vacuum that no one else was filling.
Well, look, let me ask you a question real quick about that. You know, the whole thing with Trump, and with Rand, and with all of this stuff now, is that I think you made a very good point. I think that there was a vacuum created by Ron Paul followers. I think the Liberty movement has continued to grow. I think that newsletters like yours with News with Views, and you bring out these newsletters all the time, that are the phenomenals of you guys. What's your website, Pastor Baldwin?
Yeah, thank you. It's Chuck Baldwin Live. That's all one word. Baldwin is spelled B-A-L-D-W-I-N, ChuckBaldwinLive.com.
I've read your stuff for years. You're one of the best writers with News with Views. I recommend that everybody goes to Chuck's website. It's a free newsletter. Please sign up for it. I sent 250,000 emails out yesterday, this morning for this interview today. I want you guys to do a whole bunch of sign-ups for them today. And it's also in the archives and on iTunes. Please sign up for Chuck's email. He's Christian. You guys know that I'm Christian. I'm unapologetically Christian. I talk about Christ all the time. We start our show off with a Bible verse, so you guys all know that. And so what I want people to realize is that I really support Chuck Baldwin and all the things that he stands for and the writings that he puts out with News with Views, and I have done so for many, many years. I tried to get him on the Power Hour last year when I was co-hosting for Joyce, or sub-hosting for Joyce, but we couldn't get the schedule worked out because I was only working doing the show once a week with Joyce at that point, sometimes twice a week. But let me ask you another question. Last night, did you watch the debate last night, Chuck?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, last night they asked a question, and I'm going to go ahead and paraphrase it because I watched part of it. And they were asking Trump about trying to broker a peace deal in the Middle East between Israel and the Palestinians. And they also asked the same question to Rubio, and they also asked the same question to Cruz. Now, I don't care for Rubio, and I don't care for Cruz. And by default, I'm voting for Trump because he's not the only person that I know now that Ron Paul's not running that actually is telling the truth and wants to audit the Fed. And what's interesting about this is Trump basically said, look, I'm not going to take sides in this Palestinian issue with Israel. I'm going to remain neutral. And I'm not going to look at ICC. I've been awarded a lot of Israeli rewards, but I'm not going to give them favor when I'm trying to negotiate something between these two. And both Rubio and Cruz went kind of nuts about wanting to support Israel no matter what Israel did. In fact, Rubio basically said he didn't care what Israel did, he was going to support them. How do you feel about this? I read an article that you had written a few weeks ago, one of the best articles I've ever seen about political Zionism. Tell me what you feel about that particular instance. How far should the United States go, and how far should we go as Christians, Chuck, to support Israel regardless of what they do or regardless of what they say?
Yeah, that's one of the most controversial subjects among Christians that you could possibly pick.
It is. I want you to tell me what you think. I probably agree with you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you. You know what I believe. I'm not trying to pander to anybody, but I'm just saying it is such a very controversial subject. And I think for so long we have been indoctrinated in this idea that the modern state of Israel, which is now controlled by Zionists, is in some way or fashion a fulfillment of biblical Israel, prophetically. And therefore, Christians have this, they feel this spiritual obligation. It's not even so much a political obligation. It's a spiritual obligation to support the state of Israel because they associate it with Old Testament Israel and then prophetic Israel. And, you know, I got to confess to you, Ted, that I was in that camp for most all of my adult life. I was trained that way in the Bible colleges that I attended. I taught that from my pulpit for many, many years. I truly was schooled in that ideology and basically didn't question it. You know, you're taught it, you're young, you accept it, and you move on. Over the last several years, I like to think the Holy Spirit was speaking to my heart, and I was not comfortable any longer just accepting that, that standard ideology pertaining to the Middle East, especially to the current state of Israel. So I began to do a lot of my own independent research, and I studied, and I'm still studying, and I'm still forming opinion and so forth. But I've learned a lot of things that I believe that I was taught that were wrong, and I've replaced it with things that I think that are more biblically accurate. And personally, I just do not feel that the modern state of Israel in this time has anything to do with biblical Israel. I'm not talking about the future. I'm not talking about what God's going to do, you know, at the coming of Christ and the future kingdom and all those things. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about 2016 and where we are in this age of the church, in which there's neither Jew nor Gentile, there's neither bond nor free, we're all one in Christ. The state of Israel, in my opinion, has nothing to do with the biblical Israel, either past or future. So if you look at it, if you can get past that, and I know that's a hard thing for most Christians to get past, but if you can get past that, and then you can start realizing what the current state of Israel is all about, and what it is, it's controlled by Zionists who are, for the most part, Marxists and socialists in their political ideology. They have an agenda that has nothing in common with the liberties and freedoms of the United States. In fact, they would not even consider themselves allies of the United States, though they will use the United States for their own purposes. And some of the things that have taken place in the Middle East at the hands of the Zionist government in Israel has just wreaked havoc and war like, you know, maybe nothing since World War II. And when you look at all this war mongering that's going on within the neocon element of the GOP, most all of it centers around Israel. And you think about the bloodshed that we have wrought in that part of the world. You know, conservatively speaking, and I know this sounds hard for some folks to believe, but if you'll study it, you'll find that I'm telling you the truth. Our military apparatus over the last several decades, the last two or three, has killed at least 1 million innocent civilians in that region of the world. Now, think about it. No declaration of war. There's no constitutional element in any of this. This is just arbitrary war being done on behalf of the executive branch of the United States of America, using the most powerful military in the world to unleash havoc, death, mayhem, and all kinds of violence in basically a limited region of the world, what we call the Middle East. And the big excuse for this is Israel. Something is wrong with this picture, Ted. I mean, Christians are supposed to be peace lovers, are we not?
I agree with you, Chuck. In fact, I know through the Balfour Declaration, you know, Rothschild got Israel after World War II. And, you know, I know you're familiar with all of that. And as far as I'm concerned, I believe we should pray for Israel. We should, you know, do all we can in prayer. We need to pray that God's will be done in Israel. But as far as sending them money and sending them nuclear weapons, I don't think we should do that. I believe that they're a communist state. Tel Aviv is the number one homosexual destination on the planet. And I believe that we should really start reevaluating our position with them. I am not a political Zionist. I do not, and I've not been trained by the Scofield Bible and their commentaries, and I don't believe any of this stuff. I go with what the Word of God says and not the commentary in the Bible. I believe that we should pray for Israel. Because those who bless Abraham shall be blessed. And I believe that Israel will someday be changed, hopefully, upon the return of our Savior, and that they won't have this type of behavior going on over there any longer. It's one of the most racist, most bigoted states in the world. It is, and it's just the way it is. The way they treat Palestinians, the way they treat Christians over there is absolutely horrific. I mean, I've read stories after story after stories, and, you know, and now everybody's going to say, well, you're an anti-Semite. No, I'm not. I never said anything bad about Jews. I really believe that, you know, that people need to understand that there's good Jews, there's bad Jews, there's good Christians, there's bad Christians, there's good Muslims, there's bad Muslims, and there's good, bad Hindus and Buddhists, and I've said that on my show many, many times. The whole point is this. The political alliance through AIPAC is one of the most powerful lobbies in the United States and powerful in the world, and the political contributions that get paid through these guys into these candidates pretty much buy their votes and buy their loyalty, And I saw that last night with Rubio, and I saw that last night with Cruz, and I loved it when Trump remained neutral. He said, I'm not giving them any particular bias. I'm going to remain neutral if I try to broker a peace deal between them. And that's how I feel. And now I've come out on national radio, and I've said this, and that's just the way it's going to work for me the rest of my life as far as I'm concerned. So I don't know if you agree with that or not, but let's just change topics because it's a hot topic to talk about. Let's go to
I do agree with that, Ted. I'll just go ahead and say it. I do agree with that. And my concern with Trump really was a couple things, and before you leave it, my concern with Trump was along the lines of what you're talking about right now, because I've heard him say things that made me tend to believe that he was going to be another warmonger, and, you know, that to me is one of the biggest turnoffs towards supporting any presidential candidate is their stance on, you know, all these incessant foreign wars. And if what I'm hearing you say, if Trump is taking a neutral position in the Israel-Palestinian issue, and he's willing to deal with nations independently, objectively, based upon the best interests of the United States, let me throw that in, because he's the president of the United States, he's not the prime minister of Israel or some other country, if that's truly his position, then that's very encouraging to me.
Well, it is to me, too. And last night really helped me. When he started talking about auditing the Fed, that got my attention. We talked about opening up the 9/11 Commission report and finding out what the 28 redacted pages are and telling the people in the United States who that is and what that was all about. When last night, when he took a neutral stand on national TV, and by the way, he was booed by the GOP crowd that had been stacked in there against him when he said that, I thought to myself, this boy's got some chutzpah. He's going straight in the face of AIPAC right now. That's the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, in case you guys don't know what that is. And I began to realize that, man, I think this guy's the real deal. So since everybody else has gone by default, and I'm not talking Rand Paul, because I supported Rand, but I was a big Ron Paul supporter. But I really feel the only thing that I can hook my hat to now is Trump, and just hope and pray to God Almighty that he's not assassinated and he's the real deal when he gets in. Because this mess that we currently have in the White House, this insanity that's going on, is ridiculous. Let's go to Scalia's death. Do you think that we've been told the truth about Scalia's death, or do you think they're covering something up, Chuck?
You know, that's an interesting one. I would have been happy if they would have conducted an autopsy. It would have put all of the rumors to rest if there was nothing untoward, you know, in his death, if it was totally natural and not suspicious and so forth. I mean, an autopsy should have been able to, you know, to silence all of those speculations. The family, you know, obviously chose to not have an autopsy done. Scalia's personal physician believed it was natural causes. You know, he was not in good health. Most of the people didn't know that because he chose to keep that private, but he was not in good health. I mean, you could tell by looking at the man that he was extremely overweight, you know, almost 80 years old, a man that had not taken care of himself physically, a man that had a history of heart trouble. I really am kind of ambivalent on it. I tend to think it probably was natural causes, just based upon his history and his health and so forth. But I wish an autopsy had been done so that, you know, that could have been shown scientifically one way or the other. The timing of it, obviously, is what everybody is talking about. You know, well, will, you know, Obama be allowed by the GOP to appoint another socialist justice to the Supreme Court? Now the GOP leadership in the Judiciary Committee is saying, no, we are not going to even vote on a Obama appointment. A lame duck president doesn't have a right to do this. You know, we're going to wait till the election takes place and the new president can appoint the next Supreme Court member. And then you have people that are saying, okay, but what's going to happen if Obama turns around during summer recess or whatever and makes a recess appointment to the bench? And then that makes it much more difficult. Then the GOP's got to put on, you know, some real man stuff to take him out. It's easier to keep him from going on than it is to remove him after he's been appointed. So all those speculations are, you know, all over the internet and all over the social network, and I don't know. I just kind of think it was a natural death. I think the timing of it is as such that it's gonna make it extremely volatile in Washington D.C. Because if you get another appointment that is a blatant socialist slash Marxist type on the bench, then obviously that's not going to bode well for a lot of cases, including Second Amendment cases and freedom of religion cases and so forth coming down the pike. So,
what do you think about Hillary? I'm not sure. You think Hillary's going to be indicted?
Yeah. If anybody else, if it was anybody else, she would have already been indicted.
I know.
This is that Bush-Clinton political machine that has been unaccountable to the people for decades. And no, she probably won't. I mean, I know people in law enforcement at the federal level. I've spoken to them individually. You know, and they all kind of in private conversation, they'll shake their heads and go, "Yeah, why hasn't she been indicted?" But remember, when you're dealing with this at this level, you're not dealing with, you know, the rank and file federal agency. You're dealing with the Attorney General of the United States. The Attorney General is appointed by the President. I mean, this is a political appointment. This is a political candidate for President of the United States, probably going to win the Democrat nomination for President. Wife of the former President of the United States, former Secretary of State of the United States. The Attorney General's office is the only office that has any authority to go after her. And obviously he's not going to do it. So to answer your question, no, I don't think she's going to be indicted. I think she will be the Democrat nominee. And, you know, hopefully, pray to God, she won't be the next president.
Wow. Yeah, I agree with you on all of that. I don't think she'd be indicted either because if she did get indicted, Obama would just pardon her anyhow. It wouldn't make any difference. It would just be a political zoo in Washington. And even if she didn't get the nomination or lost the election and they indicted her, he'd still pardon her from the time from when whoever wins the election before they take office. Who do you think is going to win this election, Chuck?
Well, you know, Trump has all the momentum. He truly does. And if it came down to a contest between Trump and Hillary, literally anything could happen. If to predict one way or the other is just speculation. You and I both know that.
Who are you supporting, Chuck?
I'm not supporting anybody since Rand dropped out.
Okay.
I'd have to know more about Trump. Some of the things that I've heard him say, I'm concerned about. Some of the things that he's positions that I thought he'd taken during the middle of the campaign, I was concerned about. I'm concerned about, you know, one thing I'm concerned about is lack of humility, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we need that office demands a person of humility. The unfortunate thing about that is we haven't had a humble candidate for president, much less the person who won, maybe except for Ron Paul. I mean, that's an essential element of leadership, and Trump exudes the opposite of that.
I'm
concerned a little bit about some of the things he said about the strong law enforcement. You know, I mean, I'm all for law enforcement, I'm all for law and order. You know that, but. You know, the police state here in this country is our biggest problem. The constant surveilling of the American people, the doing away of posse comitatus, you know, the violation of the rights of the Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, where people are being subjected to a police state environment, which is growing by the day through the Department of Homeland Security, all this war on terror overseas and all the immigration issue and the immigration policies. You know, whenever, you know, Trump started singling out the Muslim religion for expulsion and so forth, you know, that sends chills up my spine. You know, it's like, I don't care what religion you pick any religion you want, but when you start singling out one religion over another, identifying them as, you know, the problems of the country, and we're going to, you know,
I don't think he did that. I heard him say that one time that they need to stop bringing Muslims in until they could vet out which ones were terrorists. But I don't think he ever said that they wanted to, you know, throw the Muslims all out of the country. I don't ever remember hearing him say that. But he did say that until they could figure out what was going on and who were the jihadists, that they should be prevented from coming into the country until they can sort it all out. But I don't think
The thing about that, though, is that should be said across the board. You know, why do we have to single out one religion? I mean, our immigration policy is a mess. We don't have a policy. There are immigration laws on the books already. All we have to do is just enforce the immigration laws that are on the books and just apply that equally across the board. It doesn't matter what you are.
Well, I think the reason he was saying that was because what's happening in Europe now with the massive amount of rapings and just the horrible conditions that some of these cities are being brought down to because of the huge amount of Muslims that are coming into Europe and the jihadists that are coming in. And I believe he was doing a knee-jerk reaction as far as, hey, we need to sort this out. We don't want to do what Europe did, and we need to try to prevent some of these guys from coming in. But I agree with you, though, Pastor. I think that every single person coming into the United States should be vetted properly. I don't believe we should have open immigration across the Mexican border through South America and Central America. I believe that's a complete and total nightmare. We've got anywhere from, 40 to 80 million illegal immigrants in the United States right now, and a lot of them just came here for welfare. We also have Chinese coming in here now with anchor babies trying to get to the United States. So, yes, I agree that all of these different nationalities should be vetted properly, and the anchor baby status should be completely eliminated. No other country in the world does that. How do you feel about the anchor babies?
Oh, yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, not just the anchor babies, the entire welfare system. They get medical care, they get free schooling, you know, they get insurance. You think about, you know, they can even get a driver's license being illegals. In some states, they have no motivation whatsoever to not come here. You know, you have an open border, you have a policy that says we're not going to enforce our own immigration laws. Border Patrol isn't allowed to do their job. They're letting criminals go free. They're letting criminals out of jail. They're letting people come in. You know, vetting. I mean, there's not even that we don't even track them. There's not even a way of knowing who's here and who isn't here. You know, and so then once they get into some of these states like California and others, they're giving all of these financial benefits from the state and from the federal government. I mean, if you eliminated the welfare, all of the money that we are giving to these illegal aliens, it would pretty much dry up just by virtue of that one reality. If they knew that when they got here, they were not going to be fed, clothed, schools, given free medicine, you know, education, if they knew that they were not going to have all these benefits, they wouldn't be coming here in the first place.
You're right. Now, Austin, do you have any questions for Pastor Baldwin?
No, you guys are pretty much exactly on.
Well, he only has 30 minutes of time with us today. I know we're almost out of time. Chuck, give me your email address, your website. How can people contact you? How can they support you? How can they get in touch with you? How can they sign up for the newsletter? What's your newsletter? I encourage everybody to sign up for Chuck's newsletter. How do they get in touch with you, Chuck?
Yeah, again, that website that we gave out earlier is the way to go. ChuckBaldwinLive.com, BALDWIN is how you spell my last name. ChuckBaldwinLive.com.
Some of the best writing you're ever going to read, some of the best newsletters you're ever going to get, some of the best commentary that I've ever read, on point. I agree with Chuck on 99% of the issues. The man's a man of God. He loves God. He loves Jesus. And he's a patriot. Chuck, you've got about a minute left. Anything you want to say in closing?
Well, no, I appreciate what you're doing, Ted. And, the impact that guys like you across the country having is really critical. And I think we're in a really volatile point in our history. And if we don't really get back to the basic fundamental precepts of what our country was built on, the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the natural law principles that God has established upon which those documents were founded, if we don't really get back to that, and really one of my main gripes, if you want to say that, is the lack of involvement by our pastors across the country.
Oh, brother, you can start preaching on that.
It's really, yeah. If the pastors are the key, if they would stand up in the pulpits and preach and teach and educate their people on these principles, we could turn this country around almost overnight. really, if we want to look at where the blame lies, it's not in Washington, D.C.
Right.
It's at the church. It's at the church.
You're right. I've said 100 times in my shows, these preachers need to get the lace off their panties and quit acting like a bunch of girly men.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been trying to help resurrect the Black Regiment, you know, and try to get patriot pastors, you know, and we have our Liberty Church project going where I personally go around the country and help churches get out from under the 501c3 IRS nonprofit organization status, or maybe help churches get started without the 501c3. You know, so we've been doing that for the last year, and we've helped dozens of churches and pastors get out from under the 501c3. So that's, you know, that's very encouraging, but we just need to awaken the pulpit. I think that's probably the clarion call that needs to go out right now.
Pastor Chuck Baldwin has been my guest today. Thank you, Pastor Baldwin. I appreciate you, and we just want our listeners to support you. And thank you so much for having come on with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good to be with you, Dad. Thank you for all you're doing.
Thanks, buddy. Okay, friends, that was Pastor Chuck Baldwin, one of the finest patriot men that I know, incredible writer. I wrote some of the best articles I've ever read or written, that he's written. Amazing. What do you think about the interview, Oz?
Yeah, he's definitely correct on most of the stuff he's talking about, especially with the immigration laws. That's what a lot of people talk about. You know, we need to reform this and change this and add this. And the truth is, we have extremely effective immigration policies already on the books. But the problem is the current administration refuses to do anything with them and basically gives stand down orders to a lot of the Border Patrol now and tells them basically not to arrest people, not to pick people up, to release people, that they don't have authorization to pick a group of individuals up, or they can't take them back to jail, or they can't deport them. And that's something that needs to be addressed. And I do think Trump has brought that up as well. And that's the same thing that you said about the Muslim immigration, is that he never said, you know, these people can't come in, we're blocking a certain race or group from ever coming to America. But you have to look at the aspect of that. What is one of the main individual groups in the entire world that is that is trying to inflict deadly harm on the other human beings? And that's just the simple fact. I'm not saying that all Muslims are bad, the same thing you said, but when you start looking at the percentage of, you know, Christians, Jews, Buddhists, atheists, any religion you want all the way across the board, and who presents the most violent, predominant behavior, it's almost all the time it's Muslim on every aspect.
Well, you know, and Trump has been misquoted on that so many times. That's probably Pastor Baldwin read, because that's what the mainstream media was trying to say, that he was attacking the Muslims and didn't want the Muslims to come to the country. That is not what he said. He said, before you let any more Muslims come over here, we need to figure out who the jihadists are and who wants to blow up the country. And we need to sort this stuff out and get proper immigration policies down. I agree with him, but I also agree with Pastor Baldwin. But the problem is the open border in Mexico, across Texas and Arizona, it's so open and so porous that we don't even have any border policy down there. It's just a complete and total mess. And, you know, and if Trump's really going to build a wall down there, the only problem with the wall, people could dig under the wall, and also they can climb over the wall with enough ladders and then build scaffolding over the wall. It's going to have to be patrolled and manned, and I'm sure they'll do that probably by the U.S. military if Trump's office is put in office. And I just think we have to stop this illegal immigration, Austin. You know, I'm not sure what we're going to do with all these people that are already here, especially the good ones that are here that are not on, you know, welfare. I know in my Savannah's karate class, where she takes every night, my 13-year-old, she's got a couple out of Mexico in there, and they're two of the nicest kids you've ever met. Their daddy works like a dog, and he's illegal. He's just incredibly nice, super nice people. And people like that need to be sponsored by other Americans who know who they are, so they don't have to be returned to Mexico. But these guys that are just here pulling up their welfare checks and getting paid by our government to be here with their anchor babies, the problem is, where do you take them back to? That's the question. Let's talk about it for a second before we start on the news. Where do you take them back? I mean, you take them back to the Rio Grande River and just say, okay, walk across, or we're going to dump you on the other side. You take them back down to Acapulco. I mean, where do you dump them? Where do you put this many people? Where do you put millions? So there's going to be a real problem in exporting the illegals that are here already, as far as what you're going to do with them from a humanitarian standpoint. Where are you going to put them? Who's going to take them back? Are you going to take them to Mexico City and let them out? Is the Mexican government going to agree to that? Are they going to let you land the C-130 transport planes? I mean, this is a logistical nightmare trying to return this many people into another country. What do you think, Oz?
It would be. It would be an absolute nightmare. And in my opinion, I don't think it would be financially feasible to do something that that severe. But one thing you could do that would change a lot of this is really tighten up the leniency on a lot of the welfare programs, the tax refund programs. I remember reading an article about a year and a half ago, and it was talking about how incredibly porous the tax refund system is with IRS, that they actually went and did a report on it, and they were going to different occupant, you know, houses where, you know, illegals were at, or there was somebody there that was basically, a green card holder, and they were filing 10, 15 children on their tax return, and the children never even lived here. They were all back in Mexico, yet they were still filing them on their IRS tax return. IRS was never even looking into them. They were automatically giving them the tax refund, and some of these individuals were getting anywhere from like $15,000 to $30,000 back on their tax refund for children that weren't even in the United States, nor had they ever been in the United States. They were all born and still currently lived in Mexico. So I think that would be one of the biggest things, in my opinion, that I would do is start on that and start really looking at all the loopholes and just giant, just Swiss cheese mounds, I guess you could call them, that these guys are exploiting, and they're going through and getting all kinds of money, benefits, insurance for individuals that aren't even here and getting tax refunds like that. That would be a huge factor because, like you said, the logistical nightmare aspect of trying to deport that many people would be pretty severe, and the fact that you would really cause a lot of serious long-term damage to families that have been here that really are supported the United States, and how their families react to that when they're split up and, you know, all of a sudden you have kids going one way. And the last thing I would want is any kids going to Child Protective Services, regardless of where they're from. That organization is a whole other animal right there that I mean, we only have to talk about.
I remember back in the downturn with the real estate crisis in this country, there were a lot of Brazilians who came over here who were speaking Portuguese, and they were laying pavers, and they were working. I mean, they were paver crews were almost all Portuguese, almost all Brazilians. And what was funny to me is that after the economy kind of collapsed here in the United States and the housing industry collapsed, these guys went home. They went back to Brazil. They just left. Because there wasn't any more free money for them here. They just went home. You know, they had collected so much money working here illegally, they just left and went home. And I knew a bunch of Mexicans that did the same thing. So the truth is this. If you cut off the social welfare programs, just cut them off, and you decide that the Bernie Sanders, who didn't have a job until he was 41 years old, you decide that those people just basically don't need to be controlling the money or the purse strings. It's really easy to give away other people's money, especially when you don't have any skin in the game, you know, when you don't have a dog in the fight. And that's what the Democrats do. They put a gun to your head. The Republicans do the same thing with this fascist dictatorship that we've turned into now, this Nazi fascist dictatorship, which is using a form of communism to subvert the population. That's what we've turned into in the United States. And that's why I love Donald Trump. I wish Pastor Baldwin would have endorsed him, but I think he wants to learn more about him first. And again, Rand Paul, I like Rand Paul as an individual, but listening to him speak and listening to him on the platform, it was like watching paint dry, for heaven's sakes. And that was the problem. And I think Chuck was right about it too. If he'd have come out with all guns blazing as a libertarian, I think he could have taken some of the vacuum that was out there, because this is the same mess that we had before. Bush, George W. was so hated by the United States from the Bush crime family that the doggone Democrats could have run a chipmunk as a presidential candidate, or a Kenyan, or whatever, and they would have won, and which is exactly what happened because it was so hated. And remember, nobody vetted Obama. Nobody vetted him for his American citizenship. The Republican GOP didn't even try. And why? Because they're being run by the same people, the same globalists. And I personally believe that Donald Trump's not going to play their game. I believe this is our generational John F. Kennedy, who's had an epiphany, who's writing Profiles in Courage all over again, and he's the one that we got to stand behind. This support he's getting in the United States right now. Last night I watched him on the debate, Austin, and he looked at Rubio and he looked at Cruz. They're on both sides of him, and he just shook his head and just raised his hands like, "I cannot believe I'm here with these two crazy people." He told Rubio he caved in on everything, and he told Cruz he was a liar again. And Cruz almost started jumping up and down, pitching a little fit. "He called me a liar. He called me a liar. I've got to be able to defend myself." It was so ridiculous. I had to turn it off. And I thought to myself, Cruz looks so helpless and so scared, and Rubio looks like, you know, he's just a programmed robot that's being told what to say up there because he's the GOP man. So anyhow, what's your first story for the day, Oz?
Well, this first one's interesting. You know, we hear about it more and more all across the country with gun confiscation, or they're trying to restrict rights. Now in Lexington, Massachusetts, they're now facing semi-automatic gun confiscation. This is crazy. The town of Lexington, and yes, I'm referring to the town of Lexington, they basically they have a annual town meeting to set policies, bylaws, approve budgets, all kinds of different aspects. The residents themselves do not vote directly. Instead, there are 200 town meeting members who vote in representation of the constituents. Now, one such town meeting member, a Harvard professor named Robert Rotenberg, has taken it upon himself to enact what he hopes will be a movement against assault weapons. He seized upon the recent ban enacted in Highland Park, Illinois, and has modeled his own ban, almost copying the language verbatim, filing it to the town meeting warrant as Article 34, and sadly enough, he's actually gotten a substantial amount of support from some of the town meeting members. And essentially, in this Article 34, what it does, again, the same thing, it bans any firearms that are semi-automatic and can accept more than 10 rounds, bans over 10-round magazines, the same thing we're seeing all across, that we saw in Colorado, that we saw in California, that we see in Chicago, see in Washington. All these states are doing this now over and over and over again. The town of Lexington will be discussing this on their annual town meeting and voting on it March 21st. There'll be a robust discussion before the vote, but it'll ultimately come down on how the town meeting members vote. Now, I want to say something about this because I highly doubt anybody in this town meeting is going to be stupid enough to pass something like this, so I really don't think it's going to happen. But we see this happen more and more. And the reason why they do this is they know they can't just say, oh, we're going to just ban firearms. It would be an absolute revolt. So what they do is they try and relate to the compromisers. They try and get everybody to compromise a little bit. And most of these individuals, and like I said, I call them compromisers, because they're willing to compromise on major, major decisions, but in very, very, very small incremental pieces. So, we won't ban everything. We'll just allow this, and we'll allow that, and we'll allow this. The same thing with the currency, you know, that we're seeing as far as let's ban hundreds, let's ban 50. And what they don't understand is they're constantly trying to take these high-cap magazines, these semi-automatic weapons, for a reason. Most people don't talk about this, and I'm going to discuss it for a second. Bolt-action rifles, pump-action shotguns, they carry a very limited capacity of ammunition, anywhere from 3 to 5, sometimes 8 rounds of ammunition, which means after you even can get a few rapid shots off, you have to reload in usually a pretty extended fashion. It's very difficult to load something like that rapidly. Firefight rules, one of the first lessons of firefight that they teach you with any type of military engagement, is the element that presents the strongest show of firepower or force within the first 30 seconds of the firefight has a much greater chance of winning the firefight. That's basically military rules. They've done studies on that, and they've shown that. The element that can produce the most amount of firepower within the first 30 seconds usually has an absolute chance in winning. Now, granted, there's all kinds of different strategic things after that as far as flanking, ambushes, and so forth, but generally, most of the time, the first 30 seconds are crucial in a firefight. This is why they do not want individuals having weapons that hold 30, 50, 100 rounds of ammunition. It has nothing to do with the safety of the American public, the safety and preventing of mass shootings. It has nothing to do with that. They want to limit it under 10 rounds because they know there's not a chance in the world that it doesn't matter how many individuals you have. If you have 100 individuals with weapons that hold 10 rounds or less, and you have a SWAT team of 7 individuals that have all automatic weapons and belt-fed saw weapons, ammunition that's unlimited, it doesn't matter what happens, how many people that they can get together in their group. That group with the automatic weapons and the higher capacity machine guns will ultimately win, because after the firefight starts, the first 30 seconds, there's going to be reloads on the team that has 10 rounds or less in their magazine. They will have to do it. At that point, it will be the chance for the smaller group to step up with their superior firepower. I just want to explain that because a lot of people don't understand why they're going for like 7 rounds and 10 rounds. This is why. You will expel way more than 10 rounds in the first 30 seconds of a firefight. You just ask anybody that's ever been in shooting classes or any type of war. It happens immediately. You will go through a 30-round magazine in a fully automatic weapon within a few seconds. So 10 rounds in a semi-automatic weapon is still going to be gone in a few seconds, usually 4 or 5 at most. That's why they want to limit everything to under 10 rounds.
And you know what's interesting, Austin, because, you know, a lot of the people were still running single-shot muskets in the Civil War, and the officers were issued handguns, which would hold 6 rounds, and they had this basic firepower, but only for 6 rounds. And then what happened is towards the end of the war, you know, the Gatling gun was introduced and really didn't see a lot of operational activity in the war. But that's when the carnage started. When they went to the fully automatic guns like the Gatling gun, when an entire row could be wiped out with this huge magazine and they could just wipe them out. I mean, you see that in the very end of the war with the outlaw Josie Wales, the movie. And Clint Eastwood's there, and they've got this new experimental Gatling gun and these magazines. And they just mow down an entire troop of people that have been disarmed. Now, I know that's a fictional account, but the reality is that's what happens with automatic weapon, where you simply can't fight against it because the firepower is so overwhelming, you can't even stick your head up to get a shot because it's coming at you so fast. It's like trying to go against a minigun. It's impossible. Now, yesterday I talked a little bit about Scalia. I'm only going to talk about this for a few more moments today because I don't know if this guy was involved in anything he shouldn't have been involved in, but what we have found out is this. The ranch that he was in, the one he was attending, this hunting camp that he was in, he was part of a Bavarian hunting group, a highly secretive group that's part of Bohemian Grove. Now, that we know for sure. So, in other words, this ranch is like an offshoot of Bohemian Grove for the elite to come to. Now, what's interesting about this is they had reporters there yesterday that sent out a whole bunch of information on this, and they were pictures of death masks and satanic masks, I mean, like masks you'd put on your face, all over the walls. Plus, they had statues and ornaments of people, of little children being sacrificed and dismembered there. And, you know, on these porcelain figurines things they had, you know, in the facility. This place is in the middle of nowhere, and who knows what goes on there. They were saying that some of the top Hollywood weirdos go out there and do weird things, but, you know, I can't substantiate any of that, so I'm not going to say that's true, nor am I going to mention any names that I read about. But what I will talk about right now is this. People don't understand that Nicole Kidman's father was involved with a pedophile satanic hunting ring in Australia. And what happened is they would take children and they would abduct them and they would hunt them for sport. They would release them out of cages. Now, you don't believe any of this stuff, and I don't blame you. I wouldn't believe it if I were you either. Look it up, okay? I'm going to read you part of this. Dr. Anthony Kidman died Friday after fleeing Australia when accused of the sexual abuse and murder of children in an elite Sydney pedophile ring. A month prior, Fiona Barnett had filed a complaint with the Australian NSW Police and Child Abuse Royal Commission alleging Kidman's sexual and physical assaults on her throughout childhood. When the commission opened an investigation, the clinical psychologist suddenly left his 43 years with the Sydney University of Technology and North and Royal North Hospital to stay in Singapore until he died. The family has refused to comment, and Singapore police opened an investigation on what they term as an unnatural death. In other words, he was murdered. So this whole thing is crazy. It's sick. You guys can read about it. You can look through it. It's called the Ninth Circle Satanic Ring. And it's some sick stuff. I'm not going to talk about it because every time I get involved and I start reading stuff like this, I want to start yelling. I'm not going to do that today. But I'm going to read you one more little article on this. It says the Ninth Circle Satanic Cult. You need to Google it. A child sacrifice group composed of global elites appears to be routinely raping, torturing, and murdering children for sport and for sacrifice. I mean, this is some sick, sick stuff. So all of a sudden we have a globalist Illuminati group of people who are meeting at a place that's affiliated with Bohemian Grove, and a Supreme Court justice dies. There is no autopsy. Nothing to see here. Move on. Move on. When Poindexter, the owner of the ranch, was asked who else was there when all this happened, he refused to give the names of the rest of the elite society that had come to his ranch. This is a sick, sick group of people who involved in sport of children. I'm not saying that Judge Scalia was involved in any of this. What I'm saying is that there's some weird stuff going out by these global they call themselves elites, and they're so perverted and so disgusting. It's kind of like the Hunger Games, Austin. They have to entertain themselves by sport of killing humans. It's the same thing that the Romans did as far as in the fall of the Roman Empire. They started putting the gladiatorial combats to the death. Unbelievable. What's your next story, son? I had enough of this.
Well, the German government now has admitted that more than 130,000 refugees have basically completely vanished. They don't know where they're at. The government admitted this bizarre statistic in answer to a question posed at the Bundestag Parliament on Thursday by the Left Party. It means that they have left Germany to wander in other countries after initial registration, or they completely disappeared altogether and gone underground. The number of Germany's, the head of Germany's migration officer, Frank Jürgen Weiss, also admitted that there are currently up to 400,000 people now in the country whose identities are completely unknown to authorities. This week, the German government passed a package of new and tighter laws on asylum seekers, which goes before the upper house of parliament on Friday for ratification. The legislation aims to speed up asylum procedures and makes it easier to deport migrants denied the right to settle there, with some asylum seekers having to wait 2 years before they can have family members join them in Germany. However, Germans have been told this week to brace for a possible 2.6 million more refugees by the year 2020. We've already talked about this numerous times, so I'm not going to go into more detail again, but this is the problem we talked about when all the pro-refugee people kept arguing with me all the time, and I had people getting all frustrated about it. They need to help them out. They need to be there. They need to take them in. They didn't vet any of these people. This is why we're so adamant about it in the United States. That's why Trump said what he did about this. There's 400,000 people now in Germany since last year that have no identity known whatsoever to authorities. I mean, the authorities don't even know they exist. All they know is they were counted as a number when they walked through a fence when they came into the country. That's all they know. They can't produce fingerprints, social security, photographs, ID, nothing. And now a quarter of those individuals, roughly, if you factor in those numbers that are unknown to authorities, more than 130,000 of them have disappeared since last year and just folded into the fabric of society or gone to other countries or gone into more underground realms. So this is why we're saying that. This is why we talked about that at the beginning of the show, as far as you have to have migration laws in place to properly vet individuals before they come into your country so you can find out who they are, what they're about, why they're doing there, and who they're involved with before they settle into your country.
I agree, Austin. In fact, let's look at the polls last night from the debate. I'm sure most of you have already seen this. Donald Trump, basically, who's got the heart of America now, won 64%. I mean, that's just ridiculous. This is better than Reagan. Cruz, the man who's married to the girl who basically has been involved with the Council of Foreign Relations and Goldman Sachs up to her eyebrows, got 18%. Bubble Boy, Senator Marco Rubio, Bubble Boy, he got 13%. Kasich was 3%, and Ben Carson was 2%. It was really the whole debate was a joke last night. If I was Trump, I wouldn't even go to another debate. It's just he makes them look so bad every time he does it, Austin. It's almost like a joke for him to even be there. So it's just crazy. The whole thing's just crazy. Oh, by the way, the Washington Post is the one who broke the story on the elite hunting group from Bavaria that was at the ranch. And I'm going to repeat, this is from the Washington Post with the liberal rag. Justice Scalia spent his last hours with members of this secretive society of elite hunters. This is called spin. They know there's investigations that are starting now both professionally and privately on this death. And now what they're doing is they've got to try to spin the narrative as quickly as they can. And the article says, it was by Amy Britton, says, when Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia died 12 days ago at a West Texas ranch, he was among high-ranking members of an exclusive fraternity for hunters called the International Order of St. Hubertus, an Austrian society that dates back to the 1600s. Well, this Austrian society was actually shut down by Hitler because they didn't want to cooperate with Hitler, and now it was reenacted and re-brought back up into the 60s, and Scalia apparently was a member of this secret elite society of hunting. I just don't know what they were hunting, and nor am I making any speculation on that. Austin, what's your next story?
This is out in Colorado. We've seen already the rights of people and their choice to vaccinate out of California are pretty much gone. In Colorado now, they're trying to push it even further. House Bill 1164, which just passed by committee, is on its way to a state congressional vote. It would demand that the names and addresses of all unvaccinated children under the age of 18 be tracked on secret lists maintained by the state government. This is crazy. Over the last few years, the for-profit vaccine industry has increasingly turned to state coercion to intimidate and criminalize parents to seek to protect their children from vaccines. Now, we already know the CDC has already openly admitted that the vaccines contain multiple chemicals in them, including, you know, adjuvants, preservatives, neurotoxin, mercury, you know, aluminum, MSG, formaldehyde, you name it. But what's crazy is, you know, after we saw the SB 277 in California pass, where Human Services' Diane Dooley, the blithering idiot, announced that all California children were mandatorily going to be injected with mercury vaccines because the state ran out of mercury-free vaccines, it just goes to show you that you cannot trust anything these guys say. Now, with House Bill 1164, what this is essentially designed to do is it's designed to circumvent the law protecting privacy, and it bullies people into every vaccine on the market. If you guys are out in Colorado, I highly suggest you contact your local representation, anybody you know, anybody you can get a hold of in the committees over there, and tell them you do not want this done. What's going to happen is it's all about tracking, intimidating, and essentially outlawing people's personal freedoms and rights. Once they track you, same reason why they want to make a gun registration. Once they can start tracking you, they can start figuring out who the people are that are resisting. Then they can forcibly come to your house and inoculate you or prevent you from doing other things like taking your driver's license until you have your children vaccinated. Completely totalitarian. Do not allow this to happen, guys, in Colorado. Do everything you can to fight this. I promise you it will not go well if it's enacted.
I agree with you, Austin. That's because all these Californians have gone into Colorado now. Here's one final article, and we'll be out of time. This is from, I'm not sure where it's from. It's from Tyler Durden. He goes, "We are heading into anarchy, and the official says the EU could be completely break down within 10 days. I don't believe that, but I believe it's in trouble. Norwegian Emma Solberg doesn't want to have to skirt her country's responsibilities under the Geneva Convention, and she doesn't want to trample over human rights either, but she will, she has to. It is a force majeure proposals which we will have in the event when it all breaks down. 163,000 asylum seekers into Norway last year. This whole thing is happening so badly in Europe right now that I am 100% with Donald Trump. We can't be bringing any more immigrants in at all, and that makes me basically, you know, in agreement with the Constitution, unless they're properly vetted and brought in properly. We can't do this anymore, Austin, as a nation. The country is basically broke because of the Federal Reserve Act, because we borrowed all this money from the Fed, which we never had to do, and we've been corrupted. Oh, by the way, one other quick thing that I didn't realize until today, Taft, who split the vote with Wilson and Roosevelt to give Wilson the election, who brought in the Federal Reserve Act, when he did that, I was not aware of this. Taft was a member of Skull and Bones from Yale. I found that out today. Taft was a member of Skull and Bones. Guys, thank you for listening to the Health Masters Radio. Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for listening to Austin Mead. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for your support. 1-800-726-1834. 1-800-726-1834. And we appreciate you guys, and we love you, and we thank you for buying your supplements from us and signing up for our newsletter. It's totally free. Austin, go ahead and close.
Yep. You guys have a blessed weekend. Have a safe weekend. I will talk to you guys again Monday, and you will hear back from Dad on Sunday again.
That's good. I'll see you. I'll talk to you Sunday night. Be live. Bye-bye.